Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast here on Monday, October 31st, the Halloween edition. Powered by Bet Online, of course, the big game breakdown for the NFC North showdown between Minnesota and Chicago, provided courtesy of the American Gaming Association. And Payne, before we get into the games and what we saw through NFL Week 8 thus far, what's the best Halloween costume you've ever gone out as? You don't strike me as a big Halloween guy.
I'm not a big Halloween guy at all. I think when I was much younger, for whatever reason, you get the NFL player kit costume. I was Boomer Esiason for the Bengals 1 year. I can recall that.
Did you go with was it the black jersey and then the tiger striped Hutch helmet? Is that what you were sporting out there?
Yep. Big Boomer Esiason fan, big Bengals fan, big Icky Woods fan at that time. I was young, didn't know what was going on, but yes. The other thing I did go through the dressing up as an old lady. In middle school, had the balloons for the fake tatas, so that went over pretty well. But other than that, those are the two that I can remember, the two that probably I like most.
All right, we may have to get you out of Halloween retirement for one of these years. Send out, you know, circulate some pictures through social media, see what Payne looks like when he goes to all those styling Halloween parties in South Florida.
Unlikely.
Well, it's worth a shot. You know, we had to throw it out there in this festive day that I know a lot of folks and hopefully some of our younger listeners are taking advantage of. They're able to pull in a major haul. Before we get into the brass tacks, though, and the nuts and bolts of the podcast, Payne, which, of course, we'll cover the recap of what we've seen so far for Week 8. We'll talk about some look-ahead lines and how the market has adjusted to 1 week's worth of action. Of course, the Monday Night Football breakdown between the Vikings and Bears, and not to be without our movie preview, which what we saw, a review, I should say, of Jack Reacher. The listeners, they're some of the best in the business that we have. We love all of the feedback. You guys really make this podcast worth doing. But wanted to address one thing that bothers me a little bit, and it's not life or death, the premature celebration, Payne. And apparently the guys and girls out there have a ton of confidence in us that they were ready to put the Saints in the win column with about 9 minutes to go.
I'm a little superstitious. We've gone over this, 7 ice cubes in the drink, wake up at 7:23 in the morning every day. You've been in this business long enough, it's not over until it's over. And that, there was a tweet that came across, the Saints were up, I think, 5 at the time, and we were getting congratulations. Oh, 11 minutes to go against Russell Wilson in a Super Bowl caliber franchise, a team with lots of moxie, really scared me. I thought we were headed for some doom and gloom there.
Yeah, just have to wait it out. We know we're going to cash those tickets more often than not, but unless we're playing first half totals where it only takes 30 minutes, it does take the full 60. And with Russell Wilson marching down the field, I did think about some of our listeners, Payne, going, I hope they don't go for 2 here, and let's pray that everybody got the best of the number on Thursday. So the worst case scenario, they were sitting at a 3 having a late $1.20.
Yeah, that was going to be the scary thing, thinking folks were listening to it, you know, Sunday morning, grabbing 1, 1.5, and they were going to have to sweat the inevitable 2-point conversion. On the opposite side of that, though, these football games aren't decided in the first quarter either. I know they got down 14-3, and it was doom and gloom at that point. It was, I cannot believe we're on the Saints. It's 14-3. They look horrible. They don't look tired. No games are decided in the first quarter either.
Trust the process. Trust the process when it comes to Bet the Board. We knew the Seahawks defense could potentially wear down. And if it wasn't for some curious play calling in a number of situations from the New Orleans Saints, Payne, I think we win that game rather comfortably. I don't remember a scenario where the Saints had more drives inside the 5-yard line result in field goals and or field goal attempts than ever before.
Tough to take the worst of the team. and then give away 7 points as well. So that was tough to overcome, but thankfully, you know, you're on the right side when you can overcome something like that. You can overcome the field goal attempts from inside the five, and everything turned out well.
And of course, the Seahawks will get special treatment a week from today when they play host to the Buffalo Bills on Monday Night Football. And one other point of interest for some of the listeners out there, Dave Mason actually opening up the 2 weeks at look-ahead line on New England and Seattle. BetOnline actually used Seattle -9.5, that number down to 7.5 in the dead zone. The Seahawks in an unenviable position of traveling across the country on a short week to play a rested Patriots side off the bye. But Payne, when we talk about the Patriots, and no surprise yet again this week, they absolutely obliterated the sports books. Number, it's as high as 7, comes down to 5, 5.5, depending on where you look. No Shady McCoy for Buffalo. And outside of that field goal, when Buffalo is up 3-0, New England the right side from start to finish.
Patriots are now 7-1 against the spread. And I think when you specifically talk to yesterday's game, it was kind of the culmination of a couple things. Buffalo being overrated. We've claimed that all along. Shady McCoy being out. And Gillislee is a capable backup, but he doesn't have that ability to turn the negative 2-yard rush into the 5-yard gain. Doesn't have the ability to turn the 5-yard gain into a 40 like McCoy. And really, since the switch in offensive coordinators there, it's been a lot of ground and pound. It's been a lot of rely on Shady McCoy. And I think for New England, this was obviously a revenge game. They're on the commissioner FU tour. We've seen this before with Spygate, where they're just taking it out on their opponents.
Yeah, and I mean, they appear poised to accomplish big things. Obviously, the front runner, and not only the AFC, but to win yet another Super Bowl led by Brady and Belichick. Of course, we'll see them in 2 weeks playing host to the Seahawks. And Payne, the Patriots weren't the only bad decision for sportsbooks yesterday. Had a chance to speak to a few guys locally. They said the only game that really worked in their favor early was the Seattle Seahawks going down. You had the Raiders coming through as a very public side. You had Kansas City going on the road and winning in Indianapolis, the first time Andrew Luck has failed as a home underdog during his short but somewhat illustrious career. And then naturally, it all culminates in Sunday Night Football, where a lot of folks were sitting with Dallas -4.5. Didn't look like they were going to have a chance, but the new overtime rules made that possible with Dak Prescott finding Jason Witten on busted coverage late into the evening.
It was a horrible day for the books, no doubt about it, but I think that Patriots game was the one that really just crushed their dreams. And I spoke to a couple local books here, and I had back-end access. They reached out to me and said, you know, what do we do here? And I just was amazed at that question, what do we do here? I said, take the damn game to 7 and see if you can at least get some money back. And this was a situation where one sports book I spoke to locally, at the point of 11 a.m., he goes, I have $80,000 on the Patriots and $2,000 on Buffalo. And I said, take the damn thing to 7, take it to 7 -20, see if you can get some money back. And immediately was able to get about $20,000 back on the Buffalo side, which, you know, helped him limit absolutely a death situation. And I think the one thing to kind of continue to take forward with the Patriots is, aside from the FU tour that they're on, I think the long-term picture here is clearly coached, prepared better, but their overall numbers might be a little bit deflated. We've seen this. The books mostly derive their numbers from the efficiency metrics, the yards per play metrics. They're probably a little deflated when you factor in Jacoby Brissett, Jimmy Garoppolo. So I think that could be an underlying issue as well.
Are you allowed to say Patriots numbers are deflated, or should that word kind of be off limits in regards to handicapping or assessing what New England's done or can do this season?
You know, I was against that whole thing, right? That game, that Colts game where this kind of
there were sharp guys. There were sharp guys on the Colts that game. That game was over from the opening drive. Deflated balls, basketballs, ski balls. It wouldn't have mattered. New England wins by 40 up to 60.
Could have been played on the moon with a beach ball.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about some of those results and how it all works, but this bad weekend, I think, Payne, was really jump-started by the Thursday night debacle where the Tennessee Titans look like the second coming of the old school Pony Express out of SMU. Run right, run left, all over Jacksonville. It's becoming a broken record with the Jaguars, and we'll talk about their game coming up this week with Kansas City because we've seen that number take off as a result. How do we even approach this team And you hate to say it because it is the NFL and there's going to be value and a buy point for every one of these teams. But are they even bettable given the effort levels that we've seen from over the last couple weeks?
You would hope that moving forward, and it's an angle that you've been able to use in handicapping, is when a coach gets fired, it usually lights a fire under the team. But it scares me because when the owner comes down, addresses the players, the coaching staff, and asks, why aren't we winning? You would think that would be enough incentive to kind of get things moving in the right direction. You would think with a nationally televised game, that would get the emotion and effort going, but we just didn't see a lot of effort there. And we know that's what it takes to play defense. And when you were just getting manhandled in the trenches by a Tennessee team that, yes, has a good offensive line, yes, likes to run the ball, you got to show a little more effort, a little more passion, buying into something that potentially could work. I'm not saying Gus Bradley is the answer, but you have to buy in with all those factors, and it scares me that they didn't. I'm not sure the firing lights a fire under their butt.
Well, it's a good thing for Shad Khan we don't do relegation over here on this side of the pond, where his former Premier League club Fulham was sent down to the second division. The Jaguars haven't looked like an NFL caliber team over the last couple of the weeks. But from one all-hype team that hasn't delivered to a team that was hyped up before the season and now sits in first place, or has for a lot of the season, in the AFC West. When we look at the Oakland Raiders, we knew they stayed on the East Coast in Florida. They could have lost that game three or four times. Tampa, you know, we can get into them if you want. But is Oakland being disrespected by sportsbooks given some of the numbers we've seen, or is this the point spreads that we should expect given how bad their defensive metrics look?
I don't think so. I mean, hat tip to the Raiders. It took them eight tries, and they finally outgained an opponent.
23 penalties in that game, and they still find a way to get through Tampa with missed field goals from Janikowski in overtime and end regulation. I wasn't quite sure what I was watching yesterday afternoon.
23 penalties. That's an NFL record. They basically gave away 200 yards in those penalties. And if you can imagine, 85 offensive snaps, 23 penalties, roughly one every four plays. Pretty crazy. But they won another game late. The ability of this young team to overcome some adversity. They're now 6-2, so it's tough. None of the metrics say they're a very good team. They finally outgained their first opponent after eight games, but you're now 6-2, so you have to like Carr, Cooper, that combination coming through late once again. But I think they're priced probably accurately. I know you're looking at a market shift through zero early in the week for their week 9 game. Be a little hesitant on that move, but they are what they are. They're winning games. This is probably the biggest test right here to kind of figure out whether they're contender or pretender. It doesn't look like they're going to miss the playoffs, but I'm not sure how viable of a championship team they are.
And I don't like to get swept up in narrative. Do we have to start making the case for Derek Carr as the midseason MVP and what he's meant to this team? I don't have the numbers in front of me exactly what the defensive metrics look like from Oakland 2016 to some of the Colts team, but Derek Carr starting to give me the feel of what Andrew Luck meant to the Colts. You take him off that roster, they're not even a 500 football team.
No, he's been awesome, and you have to love his passion. He's worked on his game, the intermediate route, a little bit more accurate. He had the freshman fizzle, so to speak. It wore on him. He wasn't great the last 10 games or so last year. We'll see if that happens again this season. But so far, through 8 weeks, he's been fantastic. He's not only a leader on the field, but in the huddle, in the locker room. He's just a real passionate guy. He's bought in. You can see that enthusiasm. You can see that passion out on the field that permeates throughout the rest of that team. So not just from a stats perspective, but I think, you know, the mental perspective, the passion perspective, the energy perspective has really been the biggest thing.
Carolina, Arizona, Charlotte yet again becomes a house of horrors for the Cardinals, and the bye week probably couldn't come soon enough for Bruce Arians' team that is taking on water and doing so rapidly. Panthers coming out of the bye, they looked a little bit more prepared. I'm not ready to say they're back. I won't call them a top five NFL team like some, you know, so-called gambling experts have anointed them thus far. But what kind of major takeaways did we have there from looking at Carolina putting another thumping on the Cardinals for the second time inside of a year?
Very lethargic early, and you hate to say West Coast to East Coast, but it was a late game on Sunday. I am not a Carson Palmer guy. Never have been, really. But there's been claims that him and Drew Stanton are equals, and I think that's laughable. We've seen just about every season a team, you know, they get hit with the unfortunate luck, the unfortunate breaks, and I think that continues here. That fumble call in the first half return for a touchdown might be the worst call I've seen all season. How that could be reviewed, still not ruled a forward pass, kind of beyond me there. There's just no weapons on this Arizona offense. There's really not. We've hit on this. Fitzgerald is nice, first ballot Hall of Famer, but at 33 years old, this is the old version of him. He blocks well, doesn't threaten anyone deep more than 10 yards. That's really all they have right now in terms of pass catchers. Floyd's been a huge disappointment. Both the Browns, one dealing obviously with the knee out for the season, the other one dealing with the sickle cell. There's just not a lot of weapons here. And I think we know Carson Palmer hates pressure. That was the first time, really, the Panthers created a pass rush this season. We talked about that secondary for Carolina. It's been bad, but there's been no help in terms of a pass rush in the secondary. This is one thing that I found interesting. From the time they let Norman go through this past week, there had been 19 different transactions with that secondary. It's really been a mix and mash, a hope and pray kind of situation, but they finally got some pressure from the front four in this deep passing attack for Arizona. Really didn't do much.
Yeah, nothing like treating your secondary like it's a glorified fantasy football team as you mix and match combinations, trying to go out there to win games against a Super Bowl contender caliber schedule. Obviously, Carolina gets the win, goes to 2-5, and we've seen a major market shift for their trip out to the West Coast to take on the Rams. Last but not least, Sunday night game, the much anticipated showdown of two rookie quarterbacks, Dak Prescott against Carson Wentz. For those of us sitting on first half under tickets, a cruel and painful way to go out on the losing side with a 55-yard field goal to close the first stanza. When we look at the quarterback performances, Payne, Dak Prescott's final drives kind of overshadow what was an otherwise shaky body of work?
Yeah. We saw Jerry Jones. We mentioned this before we got on the podcast. He kind of appointed Dak the guy. And you hate to be a prisoner of the moment, and it was a fantastic last drive. Come from behind, willed them to victory, showed poise in the pocket late on that touchdown pass to Witten. But man, he was bad. He was miserable for the first three quarters of that game. On the other side of the ball for the Eagles, you have to tip your cap to Doug Peterson. You know, first time head coach. It looks like the adjustments he's making at halftime have been fantastic. The Eagles are outscoring opponents in the third quarter now 67-9. So that shows you lots of great halftime adjustments from Peterson. And I know, you know, the Philly area hates when I talk about their offense, but right now, 5.1 yards per play, that's the epitome. That's the definition of dink and dunk. That's good for 27th in the NFL overall. And I know Peterson's from that Reed family tree, but right now, this Eagles offense makes Andy Reid, Alex Smith look like a dynamic deep passing attack. And to take this one step further, saw this out there. We watched history on Sunday Night Football. Carson Wentz, the first quarterback in NFL history to have 40 or more pass attempts, have a completion rate of 70% or better, and average just 4.7 yards per pass attempt.
That's something that Brock Osweiler would be jealous of having watched, given how his performance Monday night went. 70%, of course, not attainable for Brock, but the 4 yards a pass, something similar. You do mention the Eagles' adjustments, and that's what I was really taken aback by. I didn't know the major disparity in scoring margin that they've been able to accrue in the third quarter. Like Peterson's decision to kind of go with a little bit of tempo and get the big drive out of the break when Philadelphia, traditionally one of the slower teams in the NFL, I think they said on the broadcast, on average in the first half, they were taking 32 seconds of play.
Yeah, that was partly why we saw professional bettors love the under in the first half. You had the two slowest teams in terms of pace of play in the NFL. And when you really look at this, games typically average about 25 possessions. That first half had just 10, so about two short on each side average. But the efficiency was there. There was a lot of short fields there. I believe the first touchdown Philadelphia scored was a 43-yard variety drive, aided by a questionable penalty. And then you had the 55-yard touchdown. It looked like with 5 seconds to go, Dallas was preparing for the hope and heave, the Hail Mary, which kind of allowed some room to operate on the sidelines. A quick pass that took 4 seconds, and suddenly indoors you have an obtainable field goal at 55 yards, banged it home, crushed the hopes and dreams of first-half underbetters there. So that was a tough one to take, I know, for you and I and a lot of the sharp guys out there.
Yeah, it was not a way to try and put a cherry on top of what otherwise was a very good Sunday. Breaking news, by the way, Payne, this morning. I'm not sure you've seen it. Andre Johnson, the pride of the Miami Hurricanes, electing to retire after 14 seasons. Really didn't play a role so far this year for the Tennessee Titans. 1,062 catches. He'll be hanging it up. So tough to see two NFL legends go out between Calvin Johnson this offseason and Andre. But Andre, clearly a shadow of his former self. So,
I think they knew that when they signed him, though. He was supposed to be kind of the mentor to the young group.
Exactly. The kind of father figure out there to try and coax some of the young players
into
taking the next step.
You bashed Osweiler.
I did bash
Another
Osweiler.
Another win and cover at home.
They continue to win and cover at home against
to close
what
out
I
Brocktober.
What I deem mediocre football teams. And despite everyone wanting to say Matt Stafford this, Matt Stafford that, he was good, 27-41, 240 yards, and a touchdown. It was the Houston Texans getting out to that 14-0 lead and then more or less holding on for dear life. So they're doing what they need to at home. I don't want to spend too much time talking about Osweiler because, well, he just drives me nuts having to even watch their games. The voice you've been hearing all morning, he of Payne Insider. You can follow him on Twitter, at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me on Twitter as well, at Todd Furman. And, of course, follow the Bet the Board podcast Twitter handle, at Bet the Board. Check out the website, bettheboardpodcast.com, and subscribe to the podcast, SoundCloud, iTunes, and a number of other spots where podcasts are available. And Payne, we talked about the Jags a little bit earlier and how difficult they're going to be for odds makers to try and set prices. We've seen the number move for their trip to Kansas City to take on a Chiefs team who we don't know who's going to be the starting quarterback there. Alex Smith shelved for a good portion of the game against the Colts with what you could say might be his second concussion in the span of just a few short plays. Nick Foles fields and admirably throws 2 touchdowns north of 200 yards. You're looking at Kansas City at BetOnline, an 8-point favorite. Total in this game, 45.5. Kansas City going into week 8 would have been a shade under a touchdown at -6.5.
Not sure I can do it. That's my analysis of this. Not sure I can do it.
That may be a trend for a lot of games we're going to discuss this coming weekend. Not to tip our hand a little bit, but the question of, can I watch this game with one eye open, and do we have the iron stomach to pull the trigger on what you and I would call bad football teams?
Yeah, you get the extended time off for Jacksonville playing the Thursday night game, potentially getting out of Jacksonville, away from that hometown media, away from the hometown fans that want everybody fired, that want questions answered about why they aren't performing well. You fire offensive coordinator, maybe that gets things going. That's usually a nice angle, as I alluded to, that pro bettors like to look at. Plus, you're getting some value now. The number clearly, I think, says Alex Smith plays. Not sure there's a huge drop down from Foles to Alex Smith. But this number, you're going to get inflated, and then you possibly have a nice situation brewing. I would think at some point we'll see some professional monies once again on the Jaguars.
Can the Jaguars fire Blake Bortles? I know this is a broken record for a lot of our Bet the Board listeners, but can they fire Bortles, who seems to clearly have regressed as an NFL starting quarterback?
He's been bad. He's been bad. When you're clamoring potentially for a check down Chad Henne as an upgrade, things are very tough. Hopefully he focuses in a little bit more on the football side of things. I know he's a hard worker. Off the field stuff, maybe should spend a little time away from that.
Yeah, well, that's what we've heard. His focus is not always between the white lines. It may be wavering a little bit in that thriving town known for its nightlife as Jacksonville up there in North Florida. Thursday night game, Payne, Atlanta out to a full field goal favorite at BetOnline. Total in that game, 51.5. When we were looking ahead, you were talking about the Falcons under the key number, about a 2-point road favorite, but Tampa yet again showing they can't win and or close games out at home. Atlanta showed a ton of grit and gut with Matt Ryan leading the most important drive of the game, getting Atlanta the 33-32 victory, albeit in a non-cover against the Green Bay Packers.
Dirk Koetter, just not very good. And I know we've seen this with the Giants as well. there's kind of that rapport with offensive coordinator and quarterback, and you don't want to take a step back offensively and have guys learn new systems. Takes about 10 weeks. You didn't want to stunt the growth of Winston. Cutter was his guy. Clearly not a head coach. It's been ugly. Does Doug Martin come back? I don't know. Probably a big question mark here. That offense needs a semblance of a running game. Jacquizz Rodgers filled in pretty well. But it's just tough watching Dirk Cutter.
I just don't understand the play calling. I mean, Tampa has a chance late in that game to go ahead and kick the game-winning field goal, avert overtime entirely. And Dirk Cutter, it's run on first down, run on second down, third and seven every time. And while he may not have the confidence in Jameis Winston to go through an entire key juncture of the game without forcing footballs into tight windows, he's putting his quarterback in a situation where he can have no success when everybody in the stadium knows it's a must surefire passing down.
Yeah. That's exactly what you end up doing. The coaching staff clams up on first and second down, not wanting to have their young quarterback make a mistake, but they don't realize on the back end of that conservative play calling on first and second down comes a third and eight, a third and long, where you have a quarterback that has a propensity to kind of try to fit balls in places they shouldn't, and it forces him to make a play, make a bigger play, and it kind of is counterintuitive. Now, I know we've kind of seen this throughout the course of time, where the guys sitting on our couches in our computer chairs watching this, and it becomes much easier to say, be aggressive, be aggressive, be aggressive. But I think you have to be aggressive. And I think we've seen this with a lot of games, a lot of teams. There was an instance in the early game in London where the analytics guys that I've spoke to were like, kick the field goal. You got to kick the field goal if you're the Washington Redskins. Take the 10-7 lead. I was a fan of going for it. And it's amazing. It's always go for it, go for it, go for it. And then suddenly it's kick the field goal, kick the field goal, kick the field goal. I don't think anybody really knows until you're in the moment and it becomes much tougher. I was a proponent of aggression there with the Washington Redskins early going for it on that 4th-and-1 in London. And the analytic guys that love going for it suddenly, and I'm going to just kind of joke around with them. We talked during this game. He was like, oh, I should have kicked the field goal. But you have to be aggressive. You have to be aggressive. And again, you have to set your guys up for success. Nothing wrong with going a little play action on first down. A short pass doesn't need to be a deep play action shot. Could be to a dragging tight end across the field for 4 or 5, 6 yards. And you then set yourself up for success, a short second down, a manageable third down, even if you don't gain anything on second down. And then the opportunity potentially for 4-down territory if you're faced with, you know, a 4th-and-1 or a 4th-and-2. So Dirk Cutter's just been horrible.
Yeah, I just don't understand it. And like you said, I've never called plays in the NFL. I've never called plays in high school. I've never called plays in Pop Warner. But when I listen to former players who are critical of coaches running the ball on first down, running the ball on second down, setting up the 3rd and 8, the situation is never going to unfold the way you drew it up. And I think it may have been the Atlanta-Green Bay game or Denver-San Diego. I can't remember which one I was watching. And you're talking about play calling sequences. Go with the play action play inside the 5-yard line to try and, you know, force the defense to respect that. When you're in 3rd and long, whether it's inside the 10 or anywhere else on the field, you know, the whole everyone in the building knows you're throwing, and it makes things a little bit more difficult to try and accomplish the goals you set out to try and do. When we look at the Dolphins right there in your backyard, paying the Jets a nice comeback win. Todd Bowles tells the team not to come back in the locker room if they can't go out there and win in the second half. But you see the market on the look-ahead number. The Dolphins were a 3-point favorite. Right now at Bet Online, the Dolphins are 3.5-point chalk for the divisional showdown against the Jets.
A lot of hype surrounding Miami now that they have a ground game. I think everybody was a much-needed bye week for the Dolphins. They were beat up. I know they had the compliments of the full offensive line, but Brandon Elbert was dealing with some things. And this bye week came at the right time. Jai, who has been the bell cow the last 2 weeks, he needed some rest as well. Still a young guy, hasn't shouldered the load in the NFL full time. We've seen this open as high as 4. There was some resistance at 4 some places. Not really sure where this goes. The Jets, though, man, they just don't look good at all. There's lots of turmoil going on internally. So that's kind of the biggest takeaway. It was why the Sharp guys took the Browns this past week. got out ahead. There was some 3.5 in the market. Cheap buys to 3.5 early on. Three got the push with the late touchdown plus 2-point conversion there. But internally, some things just not going well for the Jets. This becomes a must-win for both of these AFC East teams.
It should be interesting to try and watch. I think I may have called it NFC, so obviously my apologies there, an oversight for the AFC East showdown. Saints on the road at San Francisco. Look-ahead number here had the Saints pegged as 2-point road favorites. And when we look at Bet Online, you're seeing this number trending towards 3 in the hook. 3 lay at $1.23 right now on New Orleans. San Francisco coming off the bye. We know the 49ers have been disappointed. At least to Chip Kelly's credit, they're not taking 23 penalties a game like their rivals across the bay in the Oakland Raiders.
Again, another one that is going to be tough to do, but probably becomes a necessary evil. Maybe the bye week helps
so,
the defense.
You sound so excited about that.
Yeah, maybe the bye week helps the defense in terms of getting some rest, recouping. There has been some give-up moments from that side of the ball. The Saints, will they remove Ingram from the doghouse after that fumble? Hightower filled in admirably. So you'd think the Saints probably have some success on the ground. Opens up for that dink and dunk, that short play-action passing offense of New Orleans. But I think it's going to be San Francisco or pass in this spot from professional bettors.
Be interesting to see who the Saints elect to go with as their bell cow back. We saw Mark Ingram put on the bench for fumble problems for the second straight week, with Coach Payton electing to go with Tim Hightower, who looked like he was straight out of the retirement home, no breakaway speed, and the youngster out of Cal, who got a little bit involved in the offense as well. We talk about the reaction there. This is the biggest. I don't want to call it an overreaction. Maybe we'll call it an adjustment. I'm not sure how you want to try and spin it. For a game taking place on the West Coast this coming Sunday. Rams and Panthers on a look-ahead number. We were talking about Pick'em here. Carolina goes out there, beats Arizona. The Rams don't play a football game. Right now at Bet Online, you're looking at the Carolina Panthers, a full field goal favorite. Total on that game, 46.
I think when we talk about the Carolina Panthers, this was a team that came into the season high in terms of power ratings. I never really took them out of the top 10, despite the 1-5 mark. You got Jonathan Stewart back. This offense needs to be ground and pound. We saw Cam Newton off the bye week, probably healthiest as he was since the week 1 game. So he was running the ball a little bit more. You got Jonathan Stewart back. The only two wins that the Carolina Panthers have had this season is with Jonathan Stewart in the lineup. It allows for that ground and pound. We know how efficient that combination is in the red zone when you really have a two-headed tailback system, so to speak, with him and Cam Newton. Very tough to stop. So that efficiency in the red zone was there. It was prevalent once again against the Arizona Cardinals. So that is a big get back with Jonathan Stewart. The Rams' defensive line, that's the strength. That's going to be the factor in this game. That ground game for Carolina, that defensive line for the Rams, that's going to be the battle within the battle. And I think this bye week, you'll have to look at the injury report, but I think the bye week was a help for the Rams. They'll get a lot of those key cogs back on the defensive line.
When we talk about Sunday Night Football, a game that we'll obviously cover in greater detail given its implications in the AFC West, and of course on the gambling side, Oakland and Denver. You mentioned earlier, Payne, some books open Denver a short favorite, 2.5 in some spots. Right now, as you look at Bet Online, you're seeing the Raiders, a 1-point favorite there, total 44.5. Look ahead line coming into the week with the Raiders at -1. Now, a 2.5-point move, pretty pronounced, not across key numbers, but through the zero. What do we make of the way the market is responding to these two teams?
Well, I'm not sure how good Denver is. I'm really not. I was actually, when you look at this game, and this is the reason why you have to watch games, Simeon threw an interception. So if you're looking at the box score, the interception he was actually credited for, not his fault, should have been caught. Alligator arms from the receiver turns into a pick six. But what you didn't see in the box score was Simeon potentially have two big turnovers again in the red zone, in the green zone. There should have been a pick six from Casey Howard. There should have been another pick in that green zone, red zone fringe area where Simeon just plants a ball right in a linebacker's chest that was dropped. So that's going to be the thing here. Not, again, really high on Denver. And there was a stat that I know flashed across the TV screen that said Denver let up its first 100-yard rusher in 22 games. We've talked about this and why, you know, the per-play numbers really kind of back out a lot of the, you know, things that don't actually happen. The per-play numbers said that this Denver run defense has been horrible now all season long. That's going to be the key to this game. Can Oakland establish a ground game? Because we know if you're going to chuck deep balls on the outside, that's exactly what Denver wants you to do. Great cornerbacks, a great pass rush that just got better with Ware back. He was limited, I believe, to roughly 20 snaps. Talib dealing with the back injury. I would think he's back for this division game. This is probably a game that decides who wins the AFC West. So this early line move would be a little hesitant to follow that.
Speaking of early line moves, Payne, and I don't want to get off topic because this is an NFL podcast. Can I vent a second as I'm sitting here? We're recording the podcast and we watch the College Football Board light up. What is it? 7:35 in the morning here on the West Coast. And I wanted to try and fade your beloved Seminoles. I watch a 7 turn into 5.5 in about 30 minutes of recording time.
That would have been a very good bet.
Yeah, in general,
it's a tough trip for the Florida State Seminoles. You can go back to Philip Rivers' days where an undermanned NC State team, he just kind of put them on their back. This is a tough trip. For whatever reason, Florida State has a tough time here. We saw a game years ago with EJ Manuel, his senior year, fifth-year senior. It looked like another championship run in field goal range, and he takes about a 17-yard sack, knocks him out of field goal range to win that game. Championships hopes dashed. So this is a very tough place to play for the Florida State Seminoles.
Yeah, and along
a tough loss.
Along the lines of college football, I know folks continue to ask. Maybe, you know, we'll spend a couple minutes on Thursday, not with any great detail, but to talk about the Alabama-LSU game. For folks that don't pay attention to look-ahead lines, just a quick note there. You were looking at Alabama, 9.5-point road favorite going into last week, and neither team played, and you see a lot of the market opens up right at a touchdown. So should be a great college football game to watch Saturday night. Even if you are predominantly a pro bettor, you may not have to invest, but should be worth the watch. Questions, Payne, from
our... Are you watching
our
the screen right now?
I am watching the screen. I'm trying to make sure that I can update all the NFL line moves as they come through and be a jack of all trades, master of none when it comes down to it. And, you know, speaking of jacks, the movie review, the floor is all yours for your, you know, full in-depth review of Jack Reacher, Tom Cruise's latest installment in this series. Was it trilogy? How many has he made with under the character's name Jack Reacher?
I was referencing a total moving right now.
I know the total moving. I don't want to really hit on that right now. I was going to kind of keep that, you know, off the grid. But since you brought that total up, you may as well dive into it because it's a look-ahead number that the number went from 6.5 to 7. Didn't think it was really full-on worth addressing. But you have seen the total go from 52.5 to 53 on a game played late afternoon Sunday on the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field.
Yeah. Luck and Rodgers.
two quarterbacks who, last I checked, have been known to sling the football around the yard.
Yeah. Anyways, back to this movie. It was watchable. I mean, there was
that's always a ringing endorsement for the movies. Like, yeah, it was watchable.
There was a slew of garbage provided for us this week, and again, it's an action movie. It's a guy movie. If you're looking to kill an hour and a half, 2 hours, get away from the wife, you go see it, probably a 6 out of 10. But it's Tom Cruise. It's an action movie. The first one I thought was a little bit better, but this wasn't a horrible movie by any stretch. It's watchable.
Do we like this Tom Cruise action movie genre, like Mission Impossible, Collateral Damage, and some of the other crap that he's put out there? I mean, are you a fan when Tom Cruise gets into this role, or do we feel like it's a little bit forced?
Here's the reality, and I like to use life as a comparison's sake. We all get old. Our talents, skills, looks, health, they all eventually diminish.
I never had any of those.
Cruise,
maybe health.
You know, in his early days, in his prime, was obviously better. Lots of classics, The Outsiders, Risky Business, Top Gun. Not a huge fan of Top Gun, but Jerry Maguire, you know, A Few Good Men. I liked a couple other movies in his early days, you know, Color of Money. Cocktail, way underrated. Days of Thunder.
Yeah, there we go. Now we're in the wheelhouse. That a boy.
So, from I know you're a NASCAR guy, so I had to bring that up. So, obviously, I think he was better in his earlier days. Liked a lot of those movies better. But it's not horrible movies. It's Tom Cruise. It's what you expect. It's action.
That's fair. I'll say, you know what, you're rating it at a 6, right about where I had the movie. I thought it was entertaining. You know, nothing plot intensive, nothing that's really going to wow you. Plenty of holes if you're trying to connect the dots there. But there were some good action scenes, some good one-liners. So made for entertaining watch.
And you're going to have to get used to it.
Yeah, I will say full disclosure, too. I didn't have a chance to watch on Tuesday or Wednesday. I had some other plans preclude me from getting there, Payne. So I know you were a little bit apprehensive that I wasn't going to do my homework when I had to sneak off to the theater last night after the Cubs-Indians game wrapped up. And, of course, we saw the overtime win for the Dallas Cowboys.
I think that's just the long line of misconceptions on this podcast. You're probably seen as the organized guy, as the nice guy, and I'm kind of seen as, like, you know, the wild guy, the one that's not overly prepared. Quite the opposite. But in terms of Tom Cruise, I think we're going to have to get used to seeing him. I was looking at a lot of the things moving forward. There's going to be another Mission Impossible, so I'm sure we'll end up reviewing that. And they announced the making of Top Gun 2. So I don't know if that's going to be good or not. The one that I do have circled for next year, 2017, this is kind of my wheelhouse. It's called American Made. And I'm not sure he fits the role. That's what's going to make this so interesting. But he's supposed to play Barry Seal. And if that name doesn't sound familiar, just do a Google search on Barry Seal in his life, and you'll see why that movie could be really good if Tom Cruise, you know, shows up and cares.
Yeah, which should be very fascinating. Well, along the same lines of Johnny Depp playing, I can't remember the character's name in Blow, but it should be an interesting watch. You mentioned Tom Cruise in some of his older movies. I'm impartial. Cole Trickle, outstanding characters you mentioned in Days of Thunder, but it doesn't get any better than Ryan Flanagan in Cocktail. I mean, Coughlin's Law, Coughlin's Law, baby. I think that is the. I think that's a better movie. I agree with you. I like Top Gun was good, but Cocktail for me was Tom Cruise's best flick when he was in that younger, producing that younger genre, and I would say Risky Business too, and Days of Thunder and Top Gun tied for 3.
I like that whole vibe. Like, just forget life. Let's just go out to this island, be a bartender, and bang some chicks,
and find the old, and find the ultimate rich chick.
Yeah, life becomes much easier. I would love to be able to do that. And there's a couple of my buddies that are like, you know, we're grinding out over here in these 9-to-5s. You can do what you do with, you know, a laptop and internet connection. I would be traveling the world, spend 30 days here, 30 days there. And it's definitely piqued my interest. I've thought about it.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, and you know, we'll wrap up the TV and movie talk. I was watching Shark Tank like I do every Friday. Mark Cuban had an interesting line, saying that, you know, when you look at it and you're dedicated to your craft, you put in 80 hours doing something you love, you may not make as much money, but it's a lot more rewarding than when you spend that kind of time working for somebody else without potential upside.
As you know, not a huge fan working for others.
Working for the man. I mean, hey, I see your tweets that come out each and every week that we drag this podcast out. I feel like I'm going to have to bump up your salary since it's only really been budgeted for about 45 minutes, especially on a Monday. So getting you to 60 minutes has taken quite a bit of effort.
The Monday editions of 60 minutes is tough. And we end up just dragging these puppies out.
Well, as we roll on to about minute 45, we did have a question from one of our loyal listeners on Twitter. I wanted to get your take on it real quick, Payne, before we get into the Monday night game between the Bears and Vikings. Satan Mike, he goes by the Twitter handle, at DVOND. With easily accessible information these days, is there less of a divide between sharp and squares in the NFL market?
Based on my timeline, no. and I feel, and I say this, and it's not to take a shot at anybody. Listen, you look yourself in the mirror, and if you're able to do that and say, hey, I'm just going to have fun on Sundays, I'm going to plunk down $25, $50, $100, and I'm going to do what I want. And listen, there's definitely some love, some admiration for being able to say, listen, I want to do my own thing. If the ship's going down, it's going to be on my own account. And that's fine if you want to bet the Patriots. And I saw a lot of, and it looks like the public did very well. And I think they kind of take it to heart when they see the pros versus Joes segment. And
the pros are
winning and the Joes are constantly losing. So when they have those few weekends, you hear from them a little bit more. And that's fine. I think you probably, you know, do your own thing if that's what you want to do. You go down with the ship. That's fine. But at the end of the day, for us, it's the long term. You're going to be able to come into my timeline, brag about wins probably 40% of the time. But when we're talking about at the end of the year, the pro bettors Excel sheet probably looks a little bit more greener.
Yeah, and they do bring it up all the time, the pros versus Joes piece that I put out every Sunday morning. Patriots and Raiders have been very good to the Joes, so to speak. I mean, coming into week eight, the Joes record using the formula I try and employ, 6-14-1. They get the Patriots and Raiders, so they're 8-14-1. They, of course, have a strong Joe side going for them this evening. And you mentioned how things work. This isn't a game when it comes to sports betting where you're trying to achieve short-term results. For a lot of folks, as you allude to, recreation is the number one goal. So bet your few bucks, play the games that you want to play, kind of use the information we provide however you deem fit. But for those of us who are in this business trying to put food on the table through gambling wins and losses, it is a much different thought process going into each and every weekend and every game where you can't let a result sometimes impact what you've seen there and how you're going to use that.
Yeah,
absolutely. To try and profit moving forward.
And I think that's a good touching point. Didn't really plan on it. I know we have a loyal listener. I think his name's Jason Long. So this isn't to absolutely, you know, this isn't to bash him or anything like that. But I know there's like contest questions. And I think your contest that you're doing is a little bit different. It's five teams. It's against the spread. But for most of the contests, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe they've advanced over the years. But when I used to play them, you pick every single game, whether it was ATS or straight up. And it was basically, yes, there was a long-term leaderboard, a full season prize, but it was a weekly prize. And for me, and you know, the contest strategy has to be boom or bust. Coming in 15th out of 60 is really irrelevant. You're not making any money. So when you have those flip games, those public games where, you know, it's a coin toss and most likely 80% of the pool is going to be on someone like Oakland, to eventually win those weekly pools, your goal is to win one or two out of the season. You're going to have to take the teams like Tampa Bay in those spots where it becomes a double whammy. Guys are losing games. You're winning them. And that's how you absolutely are going to win those contests. Doesn't matter if you come in last place. The goal is to finish in first place once or twice that season. And I think it adheres to the Ricky Bobby strategy. If you're not first, you're last.
And you mentioned that pick five tournament, Payne. To put in perspective, 33 out of the 40 entrants used New England at -4.5 in the contest. They were rewarded for their efforts. There were a total of 17 people that used the trio of the Jets, Patriots, and Raiders in some capacity. Little to say I wasn't on any of those games, suffered some bad beats with Atlanta -2.5 personally, and San Diego took what we thought was a good number, +6.5, but 2-2 going into the Monday night game. And the Monday night game, as always, brought to you courtesy of the American Gaming Association. You can see all the great work they're doing for legalization of sports betting at AmericanGaming.org. If you're interested in keeping tabs, follow them on Twitter, at Amer, A-M-E-R, Gaming, G-A-M-I-N-G, Association, A-S-S-N. It is the mission of the AGA to be the single most effective champion of the industry, relentlessly protecting against harmful and often misinformed public policies and paving a path for growth, innovation, and reinvestment. You can subscribe to their newsletter, AmericanGaming.org/about/contact. And Payne, we talked about Steam hitting the college football market on a Monday morning. Well, the NFL market wasn't immune to that either, as the Minnesota Vikings, depending on where you look, upwards of 5.5, even some 6 earlier this morning, out here in the desert. That number has come crashing down as they're now a 4.5-point favorite at BetOnline for their trip to Soldier Field to take on the Bears. Total in this game, 40.5. The Bears will get the services of Jay Cutler back. Minnesota off a terrible loss a week ago to the Philadelphia Eagles. What do we make of this Halloween clash between two proud franchises?
Kristen Cavallari's boy toy back under center. I think this is a positive thing, at least for an entertainment value. You get the body expressions, you get the body language, you get the facial expressions from Jay Cutler, which is always fun to watch. This is a tough game to gauge when you go Hoyer to Cutler, Cutler to Hoyer. Obviously, the arm talent in favor of Jay, and I know at least Elshon Jeffrey prefers Jay. but does the rest of the team. So it's tough to quantify the adjustment here. If you're looking at pure talent standpoint, this is an upgrade from Jay Cutler to Brian Hoyer. If you're looking at, you know, the locker room standpoint, getting up to play, it's probably Hoyer they like better. So I don't know if there's an adjustment at all. But what I can say, and we talked about this before, how some of these sportsbook numbers are derived, obviously public perception, Monday Night Football, two different teams perceived differently, but it's also efficiency numbers and yards per play. And when you look at this, the Bears are actually plus 0.5 yards per play. So half a yard to the good. And on the flip side, you have the Vikings. They're just plus 0.3 yards per play. So you factor in the home field advantage, a rivalry, a mini bye week, so to speak. You had 11 days rest. You come off the Thursday night primetime loss. You get the Monday night game here. Some perception in that number. And you can really see why pro bettors, you know, gravitated towards the Bears here. Took the plus 6 early in the week.
All that being said, when you break down all those compelling angles, do you think you have the stomach to go to the window backing the Bears, knowing you're one Jay Cutler turnover away from doom and gloom? I will say for Minnesota, we look at the other side. This is a team who's become extremely one-dimensional, and the running game's not going to get any better with Jerick McKinnon expected to miss with a foot injury.
Yeah, we're looking at betonline.ag right now using a 4.5. I think there's probably still some value in that number. For me, though, I am on the sidelines, have Chicago plus 6 in a couple contests, have not bet this side, probably won't bet this side. I think when you're looking at this game, and I know, again, going back to Kristen Cavallari, it scares me a little bit because it sounded like she didn't think Jay Cutler should be playing. He's not 100% healthy. We know the propensity to turn this ball over a little bit. I think there is still some value in the total, the first half market. Looking at this right now, again, BetOnline still hanging the hook on 20.5. I think that's probably, you know, the way to go here. Obviously, this has that similar feel to Philadelphia and Minnesota. If there isn't a big turnover, it's going to be tough to eclipse that mark. The turnover becomes kind of the great equalizer here. Does Jay Cutler create a short field? Does Sam Bradford potentially create a short field without the help of a ground game? But when you look at this, yes, it'll warm up later in the day, but right now you're looking at 45 degrees, an 18-mile-per-hour crosswind. You have the Vikings, fifth slowest team in the NFL. This projects to be a close game. You look at a Chicago team, 21st slowest when it comes to neutral situations, which we would expect from here. Again, BetOnline still dangling that 20.5. Makes some sense to go under in the first half.
Do we have enough of the 20.5 under minus $1.20 at BetOnline to make it an official investment here from the Bet the Board team? Or are we going to wait for greener pastures and tell folks, hey, if you want to play it, knock yourself out, but it won't get the same level of conviction that we gave them on the Saints going into yesterday's
action? Yeah, it certainly doesn't even come close to the same value, to the same position size. And again, when you're looking at, you know, across the market, it's mostly 20 out there. Honestly, that half point not worth 20 cents. But again, if you know, you need to play the Monday night game, it's worth a look. But yeah, certainly not as strong of a position, or, you know, nearly as close as a position as the Saints were Sunday.
A little bit of opportunity. And Payne, I'm going to throw out a stat for you that comes from the home office of one Mr. Papa Furman, who says, you guys need to drop this stat in there. So I haven't verified it, just got it on text message now. He said, Russell Wilson and Tom Brady through week 8 of the NFL season have the exact same amount of rushing yards.
That's interesting. And looking at some Russell Wilson stuff, he hasn't thrown a touchdown pass in 3 weeks.
Yep, and it's now 3 weeks.
What's that?
It's now 3 weeks. It was 2 weeks coming in and obviously didn't do it against the Saints.
Yep, it's been 3 weeks. But the bigger thing here is, he has one rushing touchdown in the last 27 games.
It's
shocking to me.
Always interesting to watch, and we know some of these lingering injuries become bigger issues. Of course, we'll see those two quarterbacks match it up in 2 weeks, but plenty of winners, Payne, to find between now and then. So for Payne Insider, follow him on Twitter, at Payne Insider. I am Todd Furman. You can follow me there, at Todd Furman. And, of course, the podcast, at Bet the Board Pod. Subscribe, SoundCloud, iTunes, or at BetTheBoardPodcast.com, the newsletter for all the podcasts to know exactly when they drop. One last thing, Payne, before we close up shop, movie this week, we're going to do the Tom Hanks Inferno, so the listeners can go out there, check it out, and offer their feedback as well.
I know that's the movie you would like to see. It doesn't look like there's a ton of other things on the menu, so let's do Inferno. And then one other thing, let's drum up some interaction at Bet the Board Pod. If you're going out tonight and you're dressing up and you're like a sports figure, shoot us some pictures. Let's see them. We'll retweet the best sports pictures. Also, bettheboardpodcast.com, another winner on the Saints. If you have made any money, go out there, purchase a t-shirt. They'll go out. They'll ship out this Wednesday. You'll have them same week. Also, the biggest thing for us is just tell a friend. That's all it takes. Just tell one friend, one family member, retweet the podcast. That really helps us out a bunch.
Should we offer up a free t-shirt if anybody goes out on Halloween dressed as you or I and sends us a picture?
Sure.
I mean, I'm just throwing it out there. I mean, yeah, they're going to take all sorts of ridicule and abuse. So
here's
I feel like
thing.
They should be rewarded for their efforts.
Here's the thing. We know Halloween presents itself for women to act like many.
Choose your words nicely. Choose them nicely. We do.
Many
we do have a mixed
WH words.
We do have a mixed
so
demographic on this podcast.
So you want to look your best. And so I'm not quite sure dressing up like Todd Furman is going to yield.
Don't,
to getting
don't,
the
don't sell me short, buddy.
Of
don't
a
sell
lovely
me short.
Lady back to the house.
I got that penguin suit all ready and rearing to go for my wedding down there in Miami this coming weekend. So
you went with the chicken suit last week to the party.
The ladies love the chicken suit. It wasn't quite like the Jack in the Box costume I pulled off years ago, but the ladies love the chicken suit.
Did you purchase it just for the party, or you had that laying around in the, as you would call the water closet, which would be the wrong terminology?
I've used the chicken suit in the past with pretty solid results, so I had to dust it off. This wasn't exactly a huge Halloween bash, so it didn't warrant, you know, going the extra mile to put together another costume. Didn't have one of those on the social calendar this year. So use the chicken suit. I've gone as Julius Caesar. I've gone as a Mad Hatter. Jack in the Box. I went as Ghetto Jack in the Box with a hole in my head 1 year. So, you know, we've tried to mix it all up from here and there.
You're that kind of guy. Hopefully the chicken suit wasn't next to the old hockey pads and it smelt like crap. So if you didn't get any that night, that's probably the reason why.
Always tricky on Saturday nights to go out and try and pull home talent when you got to be up at 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the morning to pick NFL winners. But I digress and want to wish all the listeners best of luck tonight, Monday Night Football, Bears and Vikings, no matter which side you're on or if you're on the sidelines. You can always sign up for some of those nice lucrative bonuses at BetOnline as well. 50 BTB on the reload, 75 BTB for folks that have not signed up. We'll be right back here with you on Thursday previewing all things NFL Week 9. Until then, enjoy the Inferno. Payne Insider, Todd Furman for Bet the Board.